right, everybody. Welcome. Picker's Market episode 50. Wow. Where's my brain? 81. Woo.
81. There's a little controversy before we're starting, too. So we'll get into that shortly.
We already have some battles going on in the morning.
Oh, boy. Well, with that, we're just going to jump right in. Speaking of battles, we'll just do this Herculean feat here on
Before we start, it's a busy week for us at GI. I'm going to talk a little bit about what's going on here. We have, you know, we have training events twice a year for our investment team that we bring in relatively new advisors or people that have been with us a shorter period of time to kind of learn more about our process and our portfolios. So we're kicking off with what we call it RIAU. So we have about 50 advisors from across the country coming in and learning about different portfolios and sales process. And the other nice thing about our events that we hold twice a year, we hold in fall and spring, we actually bring a couple of our seasoned advisors in. They love telling their story of how they accumulated their AUM and the process. And it's very helpful for a new advisor to hear from somebody else, especially our advisors that we generally work with. They're sitting on an island. It's a one or two person team. So it's nice to hear from an expert that, again, they were in the same seat a few years ago, and they've grown their book to, you know, more than $100 million. A couple of advisors we have in helping out. So fantastic event, but us three will be super busy. So I just want to get a shout out to anybody that's coming, anybody listening. It's a fantastic event.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Well, with that, let's dig into Two Truths and a Lie, AI Edition Part 2. So hopefully nobody cheated. I know this was sent out very early.
No time to cheat.
No time to cheat here.
All right. So the first one is Lucent, which hopefully you
Lisa know may not is, know what right? that is.
She might not know who that is. Alcatel Lucent. Yeah. No?
Yeah. I wasn't even born in Alcatel to come by.
Whoa.
Oh, sad.
I'm like that Saving Private Ryan meme right now where I've instantly aged.
Yeah.
Lucent provided $15 billion in venture financing during the dot-com bubble, fueling telecom equipment sales to unprofitable startups. Or B, dot-com vendor financing caused 95% fiber optic overcapacity. AI risks similar data center dark pools if demand lags. Or C, vendor financing in AI is minimal at under 5% of NVIDIA's revenue versus dot-com at 24%. On average. We're going to go with Lisa.
Yeah, that's a good start there.
See? I just started somewhere. I have no idea. vendor financing in the AI is minimal. Very much lower than it was at the dot-com bubble. So yes, under 5% for NVIDIA's revenue. You could have tempered with the percentages here. So
could have done a lot of things.
You could have done a lot of things.
Especially with no time to study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I think it's true. I don't know the percentages, but that seems good to me. Lucent Proman. That seems correct as well. Overcapacity and AI is risking similar. I mean, yeah, it does.
Hey, they're all true, Lisa.
Are they not all true, Kyle?
We'll find out.
We'll find out. I go with A. That seems off to me.
Wow. I think you've done pretty good analysis for not being around there. And I was, and I'm kind of forgetting exactly all the details.
I actually was around, Keith, but nowhere near.
Well, nowhere near investing.
Yeah, no.
So
far, far away from
that. She was on her big wheel.
Yeah. Right. Thinking about Lucent. Mm-hmm. Or Lucent. vendor financing. That seems, I don't think it's less something's with the numbers. I think that's true. Lucent was certainly the bigger one in Alcatel Lucent, JDSU. Remember all those names?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Crazy.
When I was at Oppenheimer Funds, there was a Alcatel Lucent building.
Yeah.
In the southern part of Denver. And I'd drive by it every day and I would always remember back from the bubble days. And I'm like, oh man, I can't believe that building's still there.
Yeah, no, that and remember the guy that the head of JDSU wore the beret?
Mm-hmm.
The French guy.
Weird.
It was just kind of weird for Wall Street guys to see you running around with a beret. Anyway, I'm going with that is true. And then I'm going with the dot vendor financing caused 95% of the capacity. I think that's probably true. I think that's just maybe too high a number. So I'm going B is false.
I got you both.
Oh,
dang it.
C.
So do you tempered the numbers?
C. Yeah, it's
zero.
No, it's more than 5% of NVIDIA's revenue. Yeah. They did $100 billion investment.
Oh, I suppose with the last, yeah.
But is it like the for the dot versus the dot?
That's correct. 24%.
Okay, 5%. Right. Yeah. I thought you probably tampered with that. Anyways, yeah.
Tampered. That sounds like worse than it really is. You've tampered with this item. Yeah.
Well, Lisa's off to a good start here.
All right. So I figure since we're near the end of earnings season, we'll just kind of give a little recap. We didn't talk a lot about it through the kind of the quarter, little snippets here and there, but figure I'd give a little update because I think it bleeds into overall economy and everything else. So EPS beats. So 82% of the S&P 500 companies beat EPS estimates. 91% of companies have reported. That's up from 81%. So it's just a touch of an increase.
82 sounds like a lot, but kind of perspective is like three quarters kind of normal or something like that.
Yeah. It's about 73% is kind of like a normal.
But still, that is a very good number.
It's a very good number. Yeah. It's a very, very good number. And it increased just a little bit even more this round. Sales beats, 77% exceeded sales estimates this quarter so far, improving from 75%. So, you know, top line looking pretty good. And then the revenue growth year on year, plus 8.3%, up from 6.3% last quarter, with every sector growing, including healthcare and IT. Those were the leaders. So
healthcare, that surprises me.
Healthcare was a big surprise. So, you know, there's been a lot of news out with policy uncertainty, with valuations.
Mm-hmm. And healthcare is doing like bad as a
terrible
sector. You just sent something out
yesterday,
like 50-year lows of underperformance compared to all other sectors, which is...
Whew. It's crazy. Yeah. We'll probably touch more on that. But 50-year lows for performance relative to the other sectors in the index. Pretty surprising. So with that being said, we still have a couple names, NVIDIA next week, and then we've got retailers. So
retailers are always fun at the end to give you the final kick.
Right. Yeah. So
that's earnings season.
The view on the read through for consumer, and we've had kind of this island, this desert of lack of macro data. So that's a pretty good read through when you look at some of the earnings commentary on the calls. So with that being said, you know, now that earnings is largely through, what names, sectors stood out? Any surprises, Lisa?
I think, first of all, financials were great, right? I mean, that's traditionally the first ones who report. Mm-hmm. And especially as you said, okay, we have lack of data and all of that. And consumer, like K-shaped economy and higher versus lower income consumer. We talk about that for 1.5 years now, I think. But it's still the case, right? Mm-hmm. So, and these are usually the first ones who give you a little bit an indication of how consumers are doing, you know, how delinquency rates are faring, credit cards, and all of that, which is largely positive, right? They saw an uptick in M&A activity, trading activity. So their banks, big banks are doing great, which I think was not so much a surprise, but by the extent of the performance. And also tech was interesting. Obviously, I think it's now 2 weeks ago, right, that we had the biggest tech reporting week with most of the Magnificent Seven reporting. Obviously, they drive the bus in the index and performance-wise, so that is closely watched. I think they still, pretty much all of them delivered, keep on delivering. They had some interesting reactions from investors, though, but I think overall very healthy, which is important, right, for the weight in the market that they can keep on doing what they're doing. The interesting thing, though, is coming into this year, we heard from such big hyperscalers already, Microsoft, for example, that they're seeing a level off in CapEx spending when it comes to AI. And that's probably, you know, going into 2026 will level off and maybe come down a little bit. What we heard this earnings season, that's not the case anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's, again, the exact opposite, double down and over $450 billion in CapEx spend on AI next year alone. So a level off is far away, it seems, again. So that was interesting that the reversal. I mean, some of the companies never took that back and always doubled down, but especially some of them said, okay, it's probably enough and we are ready to roll it back, which is not the case anymore, which was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's well said, Lisa. Kind of took a little bit of what I was going to talk about. I would say that the sectors, industries, obviously technology, again, since it's such a big part of the market, the S&P 500 is always a key for me to be watching. Mag 7, other than NVIDIA, has you reported, and generally they're very good. The one I'd say the standout good and bad, I mean, we own both in different portfolios, is the one I think got a little bit of a punish, we've touched a little bit in the past, is Meta. Mm-hmm. They reported in their CapEx one, I think, up more than everybody else's did. I mean, it's a big number. And I think that stock actually sold off a little bit, because at some point in time, people are going to say, hey, CapEx is great. Mm-hmm. You're building a moat. You're already plenty big. Let's actually start seeing some revenues flow through this. And the quarter itself was good. The guidance was fine. It's probably, you know, but the fact that your CapEx, so this could be, I think I said a couple weeks ago too, this could be the inflection point of, hey, CapEx needs to, I think that'd be my one big prediction for next year, that this, I think it's $450 billion roughly.
Yeah. Mm.
That doesn't come true. I think there could be some.
Downward or upward?
Downward. Okay. I think. Well, again, but that's, you know, I was kind of thinking that going to this year too, but now I'm more convinced, especially this was the first time we've seen someone actually increase CapEx, and also the market say, hey, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. And the stock's kind of bounced back some, but that just could be the point where a little bit of a flashpoint, if we look back, saying mm-hmm. that was a signal that maybe CapEx is, it's fine. I mean, nothing wrong with these stocks, because mm-hmm. they're still winners. They got big moats, but you start to need a little more direct revenue. You remember mm-hmm. Meadows back, was it 2022, the year of efficiency? Mm-hmm. They've kind of flipped.
Yeah.
And I think mm-hmm. that maybe the market may message to them at some point, some of these other guys, that
go back to that.
A little bit. Just dial it back a little bit. We love AI. It's a future. It's a huge wave. But maybe we need to dial it back a little bit. And then on the flips, the positive one out of the Mag 7 would have been Amazon, which has been a laggard. It's mm-hmm. kind of one of my favorite names of the group. It was nice to see them put up a good quarter. Their technology, their AWS, their cloud mm-hmm. stuff finally actually exceeded expectations by enough that got people excited, and that was up over 20%. Mm-hmm. So they're re-accelerating. Everybody's worried, but they're losing share to Google Cloud and other players as well. But it seems like they're doing fine. So the whole group is going, and as a whole, you know, those numbers you quoted, they've done fantastic. I mean, they upsided by more than the rest. They're still growing faster, more than the rest. At some point in time, the rest is starting to catch up. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you'll touch on to that, kind mm-hmm. of the broadening out theme. But that was kind of my surprise, is Meta on the downside and Amazon the upside.
Apple was good also. Like, that mm-hmm. was a surprise as well.
Yeah, and that one surprised me, because mm-hmm. I don't think the fundamentals are nearly...
Yeah.
I think people are... It's almost like an... I was reading the other day.
A catch-up.
It's expensive. It's way more expensive than most of the other ones. Yeah. And their growth rate's slower. Yeah. It's almost like when people are worried about the AI overspend, this mm-hmm. stock's been kind of climbing higher. It's almost like, hey, we don't want to... Because they're least sensitive, I think, mm-hmm. to the AI spend than the rest of them. So if we go with that thesis that you just mm-hmm. dial back, maybe they're a little more safety, a little more recurring, that the performance, I think, has been a lot better than I think the fundamentals
mm-hmm.
are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, part of that's probably perception versus reality, right? Like mm-hmm. the laggard in the group for AI, just visually.
Yep.
I mean, you know, they've attempted.
And failed. Now they're doing something internal that's getting some people excited.
Right. Yeah. I think the thing that really stood out for me in terms of surprises, and it's just the durability of the theme of priced for perfection. I mean, we've been talking about that for a while mm-hmm. now, and you kind of hinted at it a little bit. Some of the names especially in tech, where they beat, quarter looked good, guide looked fine. And they crashed and burned. So like Meta is a good example mm-hmm. of that. You know, pre-market, they were down like 7-8% or whatever. And they got a little bit of a recovery throughout the day, their earnings day. But it is almost like a not good enough. Mm-hmm. Everything is a show me story now, and it better be really good.
Yeah, especially for that group of names.
Right, for that group of names, totally. So, you know, it is interesting seeing that rotation and how durable that theme is of just valuations are stretched across the board. And even X the Mag 7, the S&P multiples are still 20 times.
20 times, yeah. Everybody says X. I'm like, 20 is not cheap.
20 is not cheap.
When you X the top group.
Right. So it's, you know, things are expensive across the board. And some of those spaces too, we talked about healthcare a little bit, you know, as valuations get blown out because of, you know, the top, the numerator and the that multiple equation goes down, you know, just mechanically makes the multiples look more rich than they might be. So understanding, you know, kind of the dynamics and the end markets are always important. So,
and also with healthcare, right, you want to be very cognizant where you are, right? Is it right. an insurance? Is it like devices, biotech?
Right,
so it's very diverse of how they're reacting to different things out there, especially when it comes to policy and insurers now. Mm-hmm. All of that. So,
Well, so continuing on the theme of IT and price for perfection, I think this is directly relatable. Lisa's been hinting at this for the last 2 weeks here. Nice. So we're gonna get into AI circularity and tick this off the list. So it's effectively this vendor financing, which we touched on in the two truths and a lie effectively. So, you know, where companies fund their supply chains. And that really is reminiscent of the dot-com kind of dynamic that we opened with. And there's definitely a risk there. So the meme that has been circulating on socials are basically that power strip that is plugged into itself, right? So you've got NVIDIA and OpenAI, and you've got all these other companies that are just investing in themselves to basically inflate this, you know, potential bubble as people are concerned about it. Google searches are up. Companies are talking about it. It's all the hot dot and the rage, right? So, you know, the one thing that's different this time is the AI ecosystem is underpinned by incumbent dominance and people are actually profitable. They're in general funding it from free cash and not debt or getting cute with secondary markets or IPOs with some of this, you know, stuff. But I think it is worth going through a couple examples, which these were a bit surprising because, you know, as we talked about earlier with Lucent, it's like, oh yeah, the memory fades a little bit about some of the dynamics from 20 years ago. But so on the dot-com era, I've got a couple examples here, which were surprising to me because it was like, oh wow, these are some big numbers still.
Wow.
You know, so eToys.com hit a $10 billion valuation in 2000, and it crashed in 2001 after overspending on ads. So $10 billion, that's a big number.
That's a big market cap.
Back then, that's a big number, right? Even today, it's, you know, that's in the 1,000 largest U.S. companies, right? Pets.com raised $300 million and spent $12 million on a 2000 Super Bowl ad, and they collapsed like a couple months later. They overspent on adding and just boop, gone.
That's kind of seems like the poster child of back then. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shows up pets.com.
Yes, right. Pets.com.
Poster child of bad decisions.
Yeah.
Webvan, which I vaguely remember this one. So they burned $1.2 billion in CapEx on automated warehouses. And it was basically like the Amazon warehouses today, where their goal was automated robotics that would go and like sort through the warehouse. And so they spent a ton of money trying to automate this thing, and the whole thing just imploded.
They're just ahead of their time, I guess.
They were ahead of the time. They were 25 years too early. And then last but not least, the dot-com venture capital cross-invested inflating valuations like Ponzi scheme. So that was something that's very different than today. But all of those examples are very kind of timely to say, like, wow, is this time actually different? Is it repeating history or is it rhyming? So it's definitely rhyming with some of the items. You know, they've stretched valuations, the interest in the news, that kind of thing. But, you know, so when we think about it being in the spotlight as money's going back and forth, what do you think, Lisa, in terms of the biggest risk, you know, in this space? You've given it a lot of thought. How do you think about it?
So I think, I mean, our listeners cannot see that, but the charts that are out there.
I think Kyle explained it pretty well with the extension cord.
And it's like they're going like arrows back and forth and all around the big names, right? And no one really has a clear overview of who is doing partnerships with who and where's the money flowing from and where is it actually coming from. And who is booking what revenue?
I buy from you, you buy from me.
Yeah, right. Like something like that. So overall, very confusing. That's one thing I think that reminded people of the dot-com bubble. I think overall it's not vendor financing. It's not like, which means I give you money and I owe, you know, you owe me and you pay me back. It's like partnerships, right? So that they buy something from each other. So that is a different way, kind of. That's not that. That's just, you know, just actual money flowing and actual goods being exchanged, right? Of course, there are risks to it. I mean, you just mentioned that. I mean, most of the CapEx spend is still spent from free cash flow, because these big names have lots and lots of cash. We talked about that before the whole AI spend kind of rolled over. It's like, okay, what are they doing with all of these cash? And now we are knowing what they're doing with it. But these cash piles are also coming down. So it's dragging. It started to kind of come down. And the question is, okay, going forward, are they taking on more debt to kind of cross the bridge here? And we kind of see that a little bit, for example, with Facebook kind of issuing bonds to finance their data center in, is it Louisiana, I think, or Texas? I think it's Louisiana.
One of the two.
Right, Louisiana is financing that and is issuing bonds, and that's off balance sheet, right? So that's not really affecting the metrics of the company, but it's their debt, right? Mm-hmm. And also Oracle is doing something similar. So as that kind of is increasing, we have to keep a little bit closer eye on it, because then it's not just free cash flow. Mm-hmm. Then it's debt. And then it's maybe not on the balance sheet, but that doesn't mean it's not the company's debt, right?
And it maybe, as Sam Altman was making waves last week, maybe it's government-backed debt.
Oh, yeah.
That was another whole
which they stroke down immediately, but you never know. And it's like, I think that needs to be observed a little bit more. That's a lot of financial engineering that happens there to keep it off balance sheet and to, you know, to kind of not make it obvious where it's coming from and going to. And the more complicated and the more engineering there is necessary, I think the more is the kind of black swan risk involved. If something blows up, then we see what actually was going on behind the curtain. So I think that needs close observation. Where is the money really coming from? Where is it flowing? And what is happening going forward? As we are seeing more debt now, as that slowly starts. So I think, that's important to take a look at.
And Keith, I would imagine you spend the most time out of anybody on the team looking at the growth names, looking at this, because tech is such a big percentage in that
portfolio,
in that space. What parallels are you seeing? Are you worried?
Yeah, I am a little worried, just because it's so much people buying from each other. I just don't like to see that. It's like a normal business. Like, say, if I produce X, Y widgets, I sell it to some company who then sends it to, you know, a consumer buys it. This is like, I'm buying from you, you buy from me, we all need each other. And it's like, it's all great. Happy family. It's kind of like that circular motion. Yeah, it circulates up. But all of a sudden, there could be a chink in the armor somewhere. And all of a sudden, that flywheel kind of stops. And then eventually, it would go the other way, right? That's the way things work. So we'll see. I still like the companies. I like the cash flow. I do this debt thing is a little bit worrisome. I think I've kind of said that as a positioning, how we position things, you know, generally I like it. I want to be involved. I still think these are all the real winners. You just have to be more selective within the group. And as a whole for right now, just for portfolio positioning, I have a little less than where my markets, you know, that I'm competing against have. So it's something that I'm worried about. This whole APA, Open AI, and then this government thing was another whole different angle.
Yeah.
Well, that's weird. I mean,
well, I read through it and I thought equally, I was like alarmed when I first read the headline, and on socials, you know, you're getting a lot of hot takes, a lot of hot takes on there. But, you know, as I read through it, I'm like, okay, you know, I don't know if you read his reply.
Yeah, I did. It was not nearly as bad as it sounds.
Right. It sure sounded bad. It in theory would say, you know, lowering the cost of capital, you know, to effectively, you know, create this infrastructure development and all that stuff. All that makes sense. It doesn't seem as bad, but at the same time, it's almost like a slippery slope, because there's plenty of other infrastructure that's critical infrastructure
that you can do make the same argument.
You can make the exact same argument. So where do you have like the ENC companies, engineering construction companies coming out saying, hey, we need government backed financing for our equipment to make the roads and the bridges and which there is to a certain degree, but it's not the same way.
And also like with OpenAI, that came like more into question, right? Because they're like, oh, we are spending 1.4 trillion dollars until 2030. And people are like, well, you're barely making any revenue. Yeah. Like, where is that coming from?
Right. That's the issue, I think. Yeah, the open eye, I think, at the head of the thing could be the, if I had to pick one weak point, that would could be.
And with
the
all
potential.
The circularity, like it's like dominoes, right? With all the back and forth. And if they're all each other's largest client, if one breaks down, that kind of, you know, has very much issues for the rest of them.
One of the smaller players in there, you saw a little sign of that the other day when CoreWeave, when they reported, you know, they kind of basically said we can't get some parts and things like that. So that's a little slower. So their revenue guidance for next year was kind of just flattish, where everybody else has been massively beating, massively raised. So that's a sign. I mean, that things are getting a little overheated. And again, I'm more worried about that kind of player than, you know, your Amazons and your Metas. Yes, they can dial it back. Their CapEx, I think, would help them. Yes, their growth may slow a little bit from where these AI kind of hyper growth is driven, but they're still real business models. These aren't like the pets.com. That's the, I mean, as much as I'm kind of being more cautious on it, I think AI is, we're in the early innings of it. And the companies are doing the right. I'd like to just see more revenue generated from the AI spend, which we haven't seen yet. The direct revenue link, right? Because you, I think, Kyle, you may have sent some stats on how many people use ChatGPT or all these
like
different.
It's like efficiency increases, ad spending.
One in six.
Yeah. One in six people. That's just astounding that, you know, that are using.
But I think most of it don't pay for it.
No, that's what I mean. So you need the enterprise version where people are paying, making money off it, where these guys will make money off it. But there's so many different things that you can just, you know, kind of quickly be more efficient. You know, we're, you know, looking at some processes and changing, you know, things internally of how we do some stuff. And Kyle mentioned, hey, I just create a little process for ChatGPT to do something one of our analysts did, and that's going to save that person multiple hours you know, a week so that they can free that time up to do something more valuable. So it's kind of those hidden, that's why I believe we're truly in the early innings, that we're just learning what we can do and how much, you know, there will be job changes. I mean, that's another whole subject on that, but I do think it's ultimately going to be a good thing. And that's why these companies are spending where they are, because they're seeing how much it will change the world. And I saw another headline this morning, which we've talked several times on. If you're an entry level programmer, eek.
Yeah.
Yikes. Tough times.
Yeah. Tough times. Yeah.
Well, so, you know, just kind of concluding, we could go on and on and on for this. I guess one final question on the AI circularity before we wrap it up and move on to a little something more fun.
Yeah. There we go.
So, out of some of the kind of that intricate web that's been woven, we've got OpenAI, Microsoft, NVIDIA, CoreWeave, AMD, Oracle, you've got Google, you've got Amazon, you've got all these kind of key players. If you had to pick one that is the weak point in the armor, that the cog that breaks,
who would it be? For me, it's, I think OpenAI is kind of the tied to everything. And it's not a public company. I think that's the one that kind of
it's a little less transparent. Yeah, easier to be squirrely with the numbers.
Yeah. So I think that's the one for me that I kind of question the most. Again, it's nothing that we're investing in anyway. But then that could have ripple
directly. I mean, Microsoft.
Yeah. But that. Yeah, you're right. They own part of it, but we don't know that valuation. It's every time you hear it's another couple hundred billion dollars more of where it was. To Lisa's point, I don't know what their revenue was. It was like sub 10 billion or something. What is this? Like tiny.
It's expected to be $137.
It's not quite that low, but it might be. So that'd be the one that I think could be impacted the most, which then have a ripple on the whole ecosystem. But I think that one would be a disaster for in and of itself.
I agree.
I agree with Keith. So I think OpenAI, as part of it, it's a private company. With the others, we just have a little bit more grip on what they're thinking, what they're guiding,
and what they're spending, what they're earning,
what they're earning, right? And not just, oh, we think, and we think we spend 20x what we think we spend, what we think we bring in, but that's not even there yet. So, and you know, OpenAI is kind of the common denominator for a lot of these partnerships that are kind of so intransparent. And I think that's the weak point.
Yeah.
Is that yours too, Kyle?
That is mine as well,
Oracle's the one that I thought kind of had this, when they reported, they threw out this massive number of growth that just shocked the markets, and the stock just absolutely just tore up for a couple of days. And now a month later, the stock's back to where it made that announcement, which I find very interesting.
Yeah. Yep.
A little bit more realization settled in.
I think so.
Yeah. So on that note, you know, we'll, time will tell. We'll see what happens. But I'll leave it with three kind of interesting points that I, kind of a shameless plug for a market reflection I just wrote that's up on the site for folks to take a look at if they want to. So the AI bubble, you know, obviously interest is there. Circularity is a lot of different dynamics. So these three points really stood out to me. So AI now powers as many web articles as humans.
Mm-hmm. What?
That's really crazy. Shocking. It's like a one in two chance that when you reading look something up in the internet, it's like AI or human. It's crazy.
Yep. Over 50% of S&P 500 companies mentioned AI during the last earnings season.
That's, that doesn't surprise
me. It's up dramatically. That, so a year ago, it was like 8%.
That's it?
Yeah.
Wow. Roughly, I guess that does surprise me.
And I noted this earlier a couple of minutes ago, roughly one in six people. So 1.3 billion people are now active weekly users on agentic AI. So ChatGPT, Grok, Perplexity, Gemini, et cetera. So, so that being said, let's quick shimmy over into, you know, fun stuff. I hear, you know, so holiday, we're just, you know, completed Halloween. We're into Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. I know that you are a dramatic Halloween fan. You love going to the zoo, the spooktacular.
Spooktacular, you are, is great.
I hear you, you're a big decorator as well.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving.
No, Kyle. So Halloween is
you hate
past
turkey.
Us.
Oh, you hate turkeys, Lisa?
No, I no, not really. But it's like, you know, I'm not so used to that holiday, Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's true.
Right?
Why would
so
you?
We also don't have the typical family, you know, celebrations
but
here.
But Friendsgiving is a thing.
Friendsgiving is a thing. We usually do that. But the thing is, the timing for me of Thanksgiving is a little bit off because in the Schreiber's household, since past weekend, it's already Christmas.
Wait, what?
She's
the
a decorator.
Christmas tree is up. It's Christmas. There's no time.
Well, you know what she does then? She needs to go into Festivus.
Yeah.
The airing of grievances.
No, there's her, no space Mr. for D. Thanksgiving. Like the pumpkins, I threw them all out. It's like, this is gone. Like, gone. This is Christmas party.
She
now.
Just whipped them into the yard and the squirrels are going to town.
Yep, yep. Nice. Wham! And last Christmas, that already defroze in my in my.
So you are you fully decorated for Christmas already, or just
I'm
partial?
Fully set
like
up.
The tree is
no,
up.
No, the tree is up. It's,
and
the ornaments, everything.
Gifts
is up.
Are under and wrapped and everything.
That's not gonna happen, but.
There's no hold on a whole lot of gifts Mr. D's getting.
You know, I'm a huge decorator, but when it comes to gift, I'm not very.
Oh, you're not a gift giver.
I'm not very. I do not have a lot of good ideas. And actually, I proposed to Dominic. It's like, you know,
brutal honesty.
We are 8 years together. We are 4 years married.
What more
can
you
we
want?
Not stop gifting each other random stuff at this point? And he's like, no. And
no.
I'm like, oh my God. No,
he threw the down at I love
threw
the
me
fact
down
that
it.
You,
and he has some good gifting ideas. I am just completely, I'm the one that ventures out on the 24th in the evening trying to find some things. That's me. But I am 1.5 months early when it comes to decorations.
Wow.
So
I love it.
Maybe if you put that much effort into thinking about gifts. You know.
I love the insight in Lisa's decorating
that
Christmas.
Went a little bit off the rails.
No,
I'm
that's
sorry,
what I knew. I told Kyle, like, you should ask Lisa about her decorating prowess.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I forgot. I didn't realize you totally skipped over Thanksgiving.
Now
it's
we know.
It's just a weird timing. It's just too late. I cannot wait for Christmas so long.
Keith, what about you? Are you Christmas tree up?
No, but we do have our tradition. The Gangle tradition is the day after Thanksgiving, we actually go down and chop a tree down.
Very
bring
nice.
Your family out. And
that is a cool family situation.
But the last few years, my wife's getting a little tired of it. So she just stays at home and kind of pulls the decorations out in preparation of the tree coming home. So
decorating the tree as a family together?
Oh, yeah, we do that. And then we do the, you know, get the fire roaring usually, and they got the, you know, college footballs on in the background, which I'm a huge college football guy. And we have a Christmas music going, and it's
works.
good times. The kids are usually home. So it's a Friday, the tree usually, that's the official day that goes up. And then usually my wife, the day after Christmas or even the night of Christmas, that thing's going down. She's had it.
Really?
Yeah. So unlike
the
Lisa,
night of Christmas?
Sometimes, yeah. It's like crazy because we always.
Get it out.
We host Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. We host, but then Christmas Eve we usually go to one of the relatives.
Yeah.
The relatives.
She's burnt out at that.
She's
point.
Burnt out.
Yeah.
She's
well,
like,
I better not tell you how long the Schreiber's tree will.
January, end of January,
March.
Well, it saw March last
what?
Year.
No.
Yeah.
You are a Christmas holic.
It's so March.
See, my kids like in because you've got this always on entertainment with Netflix mm-hmm. and Amazon mm-hmm. and all these things, right? Unlike when we were kids, when like it was on TV and that was it
yeah.
or the VHS or whatever, right? Now it'll be August and they'll just fire up a Christmas. Oh, and I'm like, what is wrong with you?
Insanity.
You can't do that.
That's bad.
Heresy. And my wife is like, it's fine. I'm like, you're ruining it. It's heresy, right? I agree.
August is like,
yeah, it's too early. Yeah, so that, yeah, whew. I try and temper that. They're like, but I love this show. I'm like, you're ruining this, the magic. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're big Christmas. We do almost the same as you. We historically did not cut down tree, afwards. And yep. We'd always get a real tree, but we'd never cut it down yeah, ourselves. Yeah. And what, 2 years, 3 years ago, we started going.
It's kind of fun.
It's super fun. Yeah, it's really great. Yeah. Kids are old enough now where it's like, we'll trudge through the fields or whatever and go find the perfect one. Yeah. And you make a whole day of it and you get the hot cocoa and you do the thing, you whip it on the top of the car. And, yeah. Just you like know,
it's the Griswold.
It is just like the Griswold. Yeah. Right. It feels that way sometimes for sure. But yeah, so we're looking forward to it. But we do not skip Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is sacred. I enjoy the turkey too. And we try and make it, fancier, but it's all the classics, right? It's like the green bean casserole, but it's not like the canned. We like to make it like fancy.
Yeah, you're a pretty good cook.
Kyle, actually, now that you're mentioning Thanksgiving, I think when you weren't here last Thanksgiving, but I can remember a couple of months ago in a podcast, we talked about some cooking here and we figured out that you are the secret chef of the team.
I am the secret chef of the team.
And you talked about like a pumpkin pie. So
I'll bring one in.
I just want to make sure of that.
When you're making one,
I made
two.
A pie last weekend.
Look at that.
Thoroughbred pie.
Keith and I are ready for
it was like a pecan pie, but with bourbon in it.
I love pies. Oh, that sounds good.
That's so good.
Well, Kyle.
Boy, yeah, that's good stuff.
Well, let's bring it in, and over the next podcast episode, we'll give a little.
The next one will just be 30 minutes of us eating pie quietly. It'll be an ASMR version. So, all right, with that, we're thanks for sticking around, everybody. If you liked, click subscribe and give a thumbs up. We'll see you next time.
Investing involves the risk of loss. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be regarded as personalized investment advice or relied upon for investment decisions. Jeremy Bryan, Tyler Ellegaard, Keith Gangle, Lisa Schreiber, and David Ama are employees of Gradient Investments, LLC, and may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. All opinions expressed by them and their guests are solely their own opinion and do not reflect the opinion of Gradient Investments, LLC. Please consult your independent investment advisor before making any investment decisions. The information herein is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the sole basis for making an investment decision. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. For more information, please request a copy of Gradient Investments ADV Part 2A. Gradient Investments, LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor.